Our next speaker is Dr. Muhammad Omar Rahman, who is from the Independent University at Bangladesh in Dhaka and a friend of mine. I take students to Dhaka, Bangladesh in the winter semester. He's going to talk about the maternal nutritional status in Bangladesh.
Thank you, Ricky. It's a pleasure to be here. And as the title of the presentation shows, that's when we started off this study, we had actually not a clear understanding of what factors affect low maternal nutritional status. And we were actually a little bit surprised about some of the results, and I'll talk about that. But first of all, I want to acknowledge my co-author, Qazi Muhammad Abdul Kalam Azad, who has worked on this paper in addition to myself. I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, so basically what I'm going to do is give you some context about maternal malnutrition, talk about the data and methodology, present the results, and then spend quite a bit of time talking about the interpretation of the results. All right, I mean, I think as many of us know, low nutritional status amongst women is a major problem for developing countries, and particularly in Bangladesh, and this has remained a very, very difficult problem to address. I mean, unlike childhood malnutrition, where we've had some progress, maternal malnutrition has been a very, very difficult problem to actually get some headway in, and it's not clear why. And we know that female malnutrition, particularly maternal malnutrition, has a significant impact not only on the health of the mother and morbidity and mortality, but also on childhood morbidity and mortality. So it certainly would pay off for us to understand much more about the factors that affect that. All right, as I mentioned, that despite its huge health burden, little is known about the socioeconomic determinants of female malnutrition. Now, in recent years, there have been some interesting claims because of the rise of NGOs, particularly in developing countries, and specifically in Bangladesh, where there's been a massive expansion of NGOs providing all sorts of services. And there have been a variety of claims that NGO membership has important spillover benefits on women's nutrition and health. And let me talk a little bit about how the thinking on this. I mean, many of these NGOs provide microcredit. So part of the sort of thinking on this as well, because they are the vast majority of their clients are women, and women are much more likely to use the credit for things which benefit the household, that there was this hope and optimism that maybe microcredit recipients would have better health for themselves and for their children. In addition, a lot of these NGOs also provide awareness and education services with regard to nutrition and health. And, you know, the optimism was that, you know, there's this kind of package. You not only get microcredit, but you get all this sort of education about what to do about your health, when to go to the doctor. So, and there have been sort of these sporadic anecdotal reports that women who are members of NGOs do much better. But there hasn't been any systematic exploration of this issue. We looked at this literature extensively, and we were interested in exploring it because there is, you know, if it's true, then that's hugely positive, and you know, we need to find out how it's working. All right. So the objective of this study was to explore the potential risk factors of chronic malnutrition, proxied by body mass index, and I'll talk about the definition of malnutrition that we used, amongst ever-married women of reproductive age between 15 to 49, and including the impact of NGO membership, which was one of our major hypotheses. The basic model was a logistic regression adjusted for clustering, which was used to predict the log odds of low female BMI. The cutoff point was 18 as a function of various predictors, and particularly NGO membership. We were fortunate enough in using a very large data set. The demographic and health surveys are done in 150 developing countries on a three-year cycle, and they are representative, nationally representative, include both rural and urban women. And so it's a very, very large data set to look at these issues, and it had data on malnutrition and data on NGO status and a variety of other control factors. So we were looking at basically a very large sample size of 10,000 women. Body mass index is a very common proxy variable for malnutrition, and the value of 18 is considered a mark of a low nutritional status. Just to remind people, a BMI is the weight in kilograms divided by the height in meters square. With regard to what control variables, obviously we were interested in exploring this hypothesis about NGO membership. But in addition to that, a variety of factors which people have known for a long time, and partly the amount and the pace of childbearing has important effects on maternal nutrition. The age of the mother, we also looked at issues of migrant status, because other studies have shown that children of migrant mothers are at increased risk, and we wanted to see whether that translated into the health of the mothers themselves. And we had indices of socioeconomic status, educational status, and one kind of an unusual variable, the type of cooking fuel. It turned out to be very significant, but this is not something we were anticipating at all. And it's one of those things where, you know, sometimes you get results which you don't know what to do with, and this is certainly one of them. All right. Just to give you a basic breakdown, about 27% of our sample of 10,000 women had a BMI less than 18 and would be considered malnourished. And interesting enough, we didn't even focus on this in the study, about 9% actually would be considered moderately obese. This is an increasing problem in developing countries, and this is a different paper, and it's always interesting to look at your results. Oh, by the way, that's another paper we should look at. I hadn't realized that, you just didn't focus on the fact that 9% is quite large. These are women who, clearly are not at their optimal BMI. But for the purposes of this presentation, we're really looking at the group of women who are, by international standards, considered malnourished, and the reference group would be everybody who's not, all right? About a third of women reported NGO membership. Now, I should point out that one of the limitations of this study is we don't know the duration of this membership, and we don't know the type of NGOs. We don't know whether it's just microcredit or whether it's also providing health. But it's a very large nationally representative survey, so it's representative of the country. And that's quite a large number, a third of women reporting membership in NGOs. The age distribution is not atypical for a developing country. What was interesting was that about 14% of the women in the survey were below the age of 20. Teenage fertility is a huge continuing problem for Bangladesh. We have made a lot of progress in family planning, but unfortunately, and we've gone from a TFR of 7 in the mid-70s to 2.8, one of the fastest rates of decline in total fertility of any country in the world. Unfortunately, teenage fertility remains the highest in the world. And even though there is legislation and laws which ban marriage before the age of 18, it is uniformly flouted, and the DHS surveys show that the median age at marriage, and because childbirth follows very closely on marriage, is a median age is still around 15. Very, very troublesome and problematic, because there are lots of problems that are associated with early childbearing. The migration status, we were interested because other studies that we had worked on showed a very big impact on migration status on child morbidity and mortality, and we just wanted to see whether there was any effect on maternal nutritional status. But not surprisingly, because of it represents essentially the demographic characteristics of the country, Bangladesh is now about 25% urban. As an aside, I should point out that this is a massive change. 25 years ago, it was 5% urban. Now it is about 27%. It is urbanizing at one of the fastest speeds of any country in the world. We expect it to be 50% urban in the next 25 years. So the whole notion of developing countries being largely rural is, in fact, going through a major transformation. I was presenting day before yesterday in a session on megacities, and a number of us pointed out that, in fact, I think sometime earlier this year, for the first time in the world, more people all over the world live in cities than they live in rural areas. So this is a major transformation, and urban healthcare, I think, has to be a major issue, even in developing countries where traditionally the focus has been on rural healthcare. All right, so rural-urban migrants, there were about 15% of these mothers were rural-urban migrants. About 8% of the women reported that they used a solid cooking fuel, which basically means anything other than cooking oil. So it basically means wood or coal, or in, for a lot of these people, in, and it's largely an urban phenomena, but not entirely, using leaves and whatever they can find. But this is what's termed as solid cooking fuel. Very, you know, a lot of smoke. This is a concern about air pollution and. But it, no one had ever actually even thought, explored the notion of whether there was a connection between that kind of practice and nutritional status, and certainly our results seem to suggest there is. We used a standard household wealth index, which is used in the demographic surveys. It's basically an asset score, a household asset score, and it's divided up into quintiles. And we tested out whether there was a dose response, and what we really saw was that the, basically it breaks up into, you know, the top 40% have a different response in terms of malnutrition than the bottom 60%. So we collapsed the five quintiles into a dichotomous variable, sort of poor, well-off and poor. Well-off means you're in the top 40% of household assets. And mother's education, about 27% had some secondary education, which actually is a huge improvement over over the last 20 years. And that's another very interesting success story in Bangladesh. There's been massive investment in girls' education, and there have been sort of a variety of policies which have paid families to keep girls in school, and that has really paid off. I mean, let me tell you that even 10 years ago, this number would have been less than 10%. So we have really massively increase the number of women who are getting some secondary education. And as I'll show, that has a huge impact on malnutrition as well. So first we looked at some very basic bivariate results and to see whether these there was any relationship. And right off the bat, we noticed that there was no relationship of NGO membership. Even if you just look at women who are NGO members versus women who are not, there doesn't seem to be any difference in the proportion of women with malnutrition. We also didn't see an effect with age, which surprised us because later on in the multivariate results, we do see a very strong age coefficient. And we did see a very significant result with rural-urban migrants with kind of a dose response where basically urban natives are the best off, rural natives are, and rural urban migrants are much worse. Some of this is going to be sort of teased out in the multivariate results, so I won't dwell on this right now. A very strong kind of a puzzling result of solid cooking fuel being a very strong predictor of low maternal nutritional status. Not quite sure what it means. Again, strong predictor was the household economic status. Not surprising, you know, you would expect poor women in poor households to be worse off, and that's what we found. And again, big impact of education. Mothers who had at least some secondary education were much less likely to have low maternal nutritional status. All right, this is kind of a busy slide, so sort of let me just take you through it. We did what are called sequential regressions, where we start off with one factor and then added in other things to see whether we could explain away some of this. So we basically just start off controlling for the woman's age, whether NGO and the number of children ever born, whether NGO membership mattered or not, and basically it didn't. I mean, so even as a single factor, it doesn't matter. No matter what you put into the pot, it doesn't seem to have any effect at all. Let me just go straight to Model 5 and point out some of the results, some of which are intuitively obvious and some of which are surprising. It's not surprising that the number of children ever born would have a strong impact on maternal nutritional status. We know that the pace of childbearing, and this is basically looking at a continuous variable of, so when we look at 1.07, that means there's a 7% excess risk, controlling for the age of the woman for every, of being in of having malnutrition for every extra child that she's bearing. This is a We've long known that the pace of childbearing has a big impact on maternal nutritional status. If you have children which are close, were closely spaced together, the mother doesn't have time to recover. And so, I mean, this has been the whole a big message in the family planning literature that, you know, we have to promote breastfeeding, we have to promote spacing. Fortunately, Bangladesh has one of the longest durations of breastfeeding. So in a way, This is despite the fact that the breastfeeding is pretty much universal and for long durations. So clearly, this suggests that having lots of kids closely spaced together is deleterious to the mother's nutritional status. Nothing surprising there. Lots of studies have shown that. We've just now confirmed it in a very large sample. Now, having a woman whose age is less than 20 is at 30% excess risk of low malnutrition. Of malnutrition. This has also been reported earlier on in the literature, so this is not surprising that that having children, initiating childbirth early, has lots of deleterious impacts. Adolescent and teenage mothers are very much at high risk. So again, this is not new, but this fortunately a large data set confirms these results. What is interesting is that when we looked at the migrant status, what we found was that the migration status, which as I pointed out earlier, seems to have a deleterious impact on children, doesn't really have a statistically significant increased impact on the health of the mother. There is a 21% increase, but it's not statistically significant. But there seems to be a worrying trend that the migration process may in fact be a marker for poor health. But you know, at least in our models, it wasn't significant. What was interesting was that rural native women were much worse off. That you know, clearly these women, that basically being in the city seems to help women, which is not surprisingly one of the major reasons why people migrate to the cities is because there are better opportunities, better economic opportunities, and so on. Not surprisingly, coming from a poor family has a huge increase in risk. We're not quite sure what this means because we've sort of controlled for the nutritional status of the mother. For a variety of things, we're not quite sure what is it that's causing the problem for women. I mean, other than sort of the basic notion that they're just getting less food and they're getting less, and that may just be it, that they just don't have enough household resources to get food for themselves. The solid cooking and the mother's education is again, a very strong result. And there again, you know, the thinking is that, remember, you're controlling for poverty. So it basically what this result is saying that if you have two households, both of which are equally poor, if a mother has, if in one of them a woman has more than 5 years of education, or less than 5 years of education, she's worse off. So this is not a household poverty issue. It seems to suggest that information may be an important factor here, that education gives you the wherewithal to maximize your resources. So even if you're poor, if you're an educated poor mother, you're much more likely to be better off because you have some idea about how to manage your nutritional resources. And that's a result which, you know, I think fits in with the literature. The very surprising result is the solid cooking fuel. And I don't know what that means. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I can speculate, and one of the things that, and let's go on. We've talked about this. Some of the results are intuitive: household poverty, multiple closely spaced births, low maternal education effect. Has been reported before, and it's nice to know that it's such a strong effect, so that education status really makes it huge. So, as I mentioned, it may reflect awareness about maternal nutrition, and also. Higher education may mean that you have more control over household distribution of resources. If you're an educated woman, you're much more likely to get your fair share of the nutritional resources in the household, however constrained they may be. While if you're not educated, your negotiating power is much less. The strong negative impact of solid fuels, intriguing. Superficially, this seems to suggest that there is an air pollution effect, that these women who are in contact with this, you know, very smoky environment, maybe it may be having spillover effects on long-term nutrition. But of course, it could also be a proxy for urban household poverty. Most of this is urban. We've talked about rural residents. Probably reflects. I mean, even though we've controlled for poverty, basically there's just less access to nutritional resources in rural areas. I mean, basically urban areas are just richer. The lack of impact of NGO membership. Remember, we started off with this notion that, you know, this could be an interesting result. And even as a single effect, suggests that affecting maternal nutrition status is a complex phenomena. It's not enough just to tell the woman that, you know, you should get better nutrition or these are the foods that you need to eat. And as I said, we don't have data on duration of membership, which actually I think would have been very useful, and also on the type of NGOs. And if we were to have this kind of data, we could probably tease this out. But I think what we're looking at is that, you know, our early optimism needs to be a bit more guarded. I think NGO membership does provide benefits for women. Some of them are direct in terms of microcredit and so on. But I think structural change is going to take time. It takes a maternal nutrition status is a very, very stable indicator of welfare. And it means that it's resistant to short-term initiatives. I think long-term, staying the course kinds of things do make a difference, but they're not going to make a difference in a year or two. And I think that's really the message of the NGO membership thing, is that I do think there is traction and possibilities there, but you need to have a much longer time frame. All right, I just want to conclude. Public policy should be directed towards what? One is the obvious family planning message, that decreasing the number of births and particularly increasing the spacing between births. As I said, TFR in Bangladesh has gone down dramatically. It's now at 2.8, so we seem to be doing a fair job about that. But we still are ending up with 27% malnourished, so you know there's a ways to go. Obviously, increasing household wealth and access to nutritional resources is going to have an impact. The economy is growing at about 6% a year, so eventually we may grow our way out of it, but that's going to take a while. The education results show this very strong impact of nutrition and the decision-making power about nutrition allocations, and there also we are making headway, and I think this is going to have a really big effect because we're still not seeing all the cohorts that are coming up now, all of whom will have had secondary education. I think if we were to do this study 5 years from now, we would hopefully see a lot smaller proportion of women being malnourished. And obviously, reducing the use of solid fuels definitely would help. It's not clear what this is picking up. All right. Thank you very much.
Young mothers, they are not controlling.
That's what I thought.
So that's why the